This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
So it's been a consequential election for South Africa because it's going to be a new beginning, considering that the ANC also lost dominance of the parliament, and now there has to be some kind of governing coalition.
That was Chris Asiki, Professor of African Studies and International Relations at the University of Pretoria, on South Africa's efforts to cobble together a ruling coalition. Details coming up also. A nationwide strike in Nigeria is on hold for a week for negotiations on a new minimum wage. And South Korea says it will expand development aid to Africa. These stories and more on African News Tonight. Our top story, unions have temporarily suspended a day-old nationwide strike in Nigeria to make time for uninterrupted meetings with a tripartite camp committee on a new national minimum wage and a frustrating electricity surcharge. Our reporter in Abuja, Nigeria, tells us more.
The organized labor comprising the Nigeria Labor Congress, or NLC, and the Trade Union Congress, or TUC, met with Secretary to the Government of the Federation, Judge Akume, and other government officials last night. Akume says the officials agreed that President Bola Tinubu was committed to a new minimum monthly wage above 60,000 naira, which is the equivalent of about $46.
His Excellency Bola Ahmed Tinubu, GCFR, is committed to a national minimum wage that is higher than 60,000. Arising from the above, the tripartite committee is to meet every day for the next 1 week with a view to arriving at an agreeable national minimum wage.
The strike began yesterday. Labour unions then agreed to call it up for next week while the talks go on. Much of Nigeria's economy ground to a halt yesterday as workers shut down aviation, financial institutions, the power grid, ports, schools, road transport, telecommunications and other key sectors, protesting the government's failure to implement the new minimum wage and reverse the electricity tariff hike. Airlines cancelled flights, leaving passengers stranded, while the Transmission Company of Nigeria shut down the national grid, plunging the country into darkness and contributing to the loss of lives in some hospitals. Access to fuel and diesel have been scarce, as the Nigerian Union of Petroleum and National Gas Workers also took part in the strike. With a strike on hold, organized labor is engaged in talks with the tripartite committee set up by the government on details over the new national minimum wage. For VOA News, from Abuja, Nigeria.
One day of service outages left Lagos residents bemoaning the impact and hoping for a quick resolution on the key issues of a rise in the national minimum wage and a rollback of the increase in the electricity tariff. VOA asked some Lagos residents whether disruptions of electricity, transportation or schools hit them hardest. We'll have a report of that later on. South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol opened a two-day summit today with dozens of African leaders. Yoon says his country will expand development aid to Africa and pursue deeper cooperation with the region on critical minerals and technology. VOA Korean Service reporter Yoon Jan Chow says in return, South Korea will expect to get access to Africa's vast natural resources, especially minerals.
South Korea looks to tap into the African continent's rich mineral resources and potential as a vast export market. South Korea is one of the world's largest energy buyers. South Korea, which imports about 95% of its industrial minerals last year. And South Korea imported this industrial mineral from China mostly. So if South Korea can diversify the mineral source to Africa, that would be a great opportunity for South Korea, especially because South Korea is a leading semiconductor producer, home to many companies that produces chips. So South Korea really needs this mineral import. And that is one of the agreements also made between South Korea and the African leaders for the sustainable supply chain of mineral goods.
Is President Yoon asking the African heads of state to get involved politically at all and take South Korea's side?
Yes, in fact, Yoon Suk-yeol, President Yoon Suk-yeol actually said this explicitly when he met with the African leaders. He asked the African countries to take firmer steps in international pressure against North Korea. So far, South Korea has only been focusing on big powers like China, United States, and Russia to exert pressure against North Korea. But South Korea has recently realized the importance of other countries as well. And South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol's goal is to become the global pivotal state, meaning that it wants to play a global role and, you know, be friend with other countries as well, and not just big powers, and especially Africa, because there are so many countries, 55 countries on the continent, and that takes up about a quarter of 193 members of the United Nations, and that all translates into votes. So when you're at United Nations, you want to come up with new resolutions against North Korea, and South African countries can play a big role in its voting power.
What about these Korean investments in Africa? Does South Korea already have quite a few companies operating in some African nations? And if so, where might these places be?
According to South Korea's International Trade Association, from 2000 to 2023, there were some 691 new Korean companies established in Africa and invested some $5.8 billion. Of course, that's only a handful if you consider there are 55 countries in Africa. So that's why South Korea looks to establish more companies in Africa and have more trade relations there. In the most recent 5 years, from 2019 to 2023, South Korean companies invested mainly in mining and manufacturing in African countries such as Madagascar, Liberia, and Egypt.
That was VOA Korea Service reporter Injang Chow. She was speaking with my colleague Carol Van Dam. A new report by the UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, warns few protection services are available to help the hundreds of thousands of refugees and migrants who risk their lives every year making the dangerous journey from Africa to Europe. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The report highlights the many horrors faced by refugees and migrants who embark on dangerous trips leading from East and West Africa across the central Mediterranean Sea to Europe. Every year, the UN Refugee Agency says many people from about 20 different African countries, and increasingly from Asia and the Middle East, die while crossing the desert or borders. Most of those who survive suffer serious human rights violations en route, including sexual and gender-based violence, kidnappings for ransom, and torture. Vincent Costel is UNHCR Special Envoy for the situation in the Western and Central Mediterranean. He says protection services, which can mitigate the suffering of refugees and migrants on their journeys, are severely lacking.
In many countries, the services that were there in 2022, 2023 are no longer there. This is the case in particular in Morocco, in Mauritania, in Sudan because of the conflict, in the northern part of Niger, in the southern part of Algeria. So basically these are in key hubs, key crossing roads that are used by migrants and refugees.
Costel says protection services such as immediate humanitarian assistance, shelter for people who have been exposed to violence, and access to justice are often not available. In the past, he notes, the national military police in Agadez, Niger, would pick up people who had been stranded or abandoned by smugglers and traffickers in the desert. But such rescue missions, he says, no longer occur along that route.
The only country on the African continent where I know that this concept is implemented is in Djibouti, where the Djiboutian authorities are patrolling their coast, but on the land side of the coast, to see people that have been abandoned by smugglers there in desertic areas, or people who have returned with the same smugglers from Yemen.
Costel says the report provides tailored information for refugees and migrants on services that currently are available along the routes they are traveling. For example, he says it contains GPS coordinates and WhatsApp numbers that refugees and migrants can use to find out where essential, possibly life-saving protective services can be found. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. And for more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. The world news, check out voanews.com. Somalia expects all Ethiopian troops to leave the country by December when the mandate for the African Union transition mission expires. Somali National Security Advisor Hussein Sheikh Ali said Friday that Ethiopian troops want to be a part of the African Union forces being organized with international partners to secure key installations in Somalia for 1 year from January 2025. But Ali's comments worry some Somali officials in the region where Ethiopian troops operate. They say the absence of the troops could benefit Al-Shabaab militants. Relations between Somalia and Ethiopia have been worsening since January 1st, when Ethiopia signed a Memorandum of Understanding, MOU, with the self-declared Republic of Somaliland, which Mogadishu views as a violation of its sovereignty. Ethiopia and Somaliland defended the MOU. Some observers say Mogadishu's position poses security challenges on the ground. VOA's Harun Maruf spoke with Horn of Africa security analyst Samira Gaid and asked why the potential departure of Ethiopian forces is a controversial move in Somalia.
I believe it's a controversial issue for two factors. Number one, because Ethiopia is an integral part of Somalia's security architecture at this point. Ethiopia is part of the ATMIS forces that exist, and Ethiopia has also got non-ATMIS forces in many areas in Somalia. So they hold some substantial ground in that sense. Number two, and also because of the diplomatic issue that has existed between Somalia and Ethiopia over the past 6 months in relation to the illegal MOU that was signed between Somaliland and Ethiopia.
And the federal government, especially the National Security Advisor, said the government expects Ethiopian troops to leave by December, but some Somali regions are not happy with that statement. Why?
I believe that the matter should have been consulted internally so that that disagreement would not have been made public. But the most important thing is that if the ATMIS forces, especially the Ethiopians, are to depart from any part of the country, there has to be some discussion with the federal member states because they have security forces in those areas. And the gaps that occur in security or might not occur will impact them primarily. So I think the FMSs have a huge stake when it comes to ATMIS forces' departure or staying. And they deserve to be part of the discussion, at least internally.
What do you make of this whole process to end the African Union mission in Somalia by the end of December and the possible deployment of a new force under a new name, which we don't know yet? How do you think this is going to go in Somalia?
First of all, the end of an AU mission is an important thing. It's important because I think Somali security forces need to eventually take on responsibilities. The sooner the better, but it has to be gradual and well prepared for. So this is something that I think principally has to occur. But the deadline of December 2024, especially when looking at the past 2 years, the security ownership that the government has taken, the setbacks that we've faced, I think December 2024 was always going to be unrealistic. And now the government has come up with a new plan to have AU forces post-2024, which I think is positive. This new mission has different tasks, I assume. It will have to have, you know, different tasks from the previous mission. But eventually, the realization that Somalia wasn't ready is really implicit in the decision to have a post-ATMIS mission.
And the final question is, does Somalia have forces that are capable of taking over responsibilities beyond December 2024?
Yes, I believe Somalia does have forces that are able to take over security responsibilities, but the challenge is the coordination of those security forces, the command and control of those security forces, the coordination with FMS security forces. I think our challenge is not number of forces, but really coordination of those forces and also the sustainability of those forces, the resources that goes towards that.
That was Horn of Africa security analyst Samira Gaid speaking by phone with VOA's Haroon Maarouf. An African affairs expert says the outcome of South Africa's general election has many lessons for other African countries. The ruling African National Congress failed to win a majority of votes to form a government for the first time since the end of apartheid 3 decades ago. Chris Isiki, professor of African Studies and International Relations at the University of Pretoria, says one lesson is the governing elites should not take voters for granted. He tells reporter Mike Mbonye the vote was well organized.
Thank you. Yes, this has been the most consequential election the ANC has had, South Africa has had since 1994, because it was one where the decline and fall from power of the ANC, you know, became actualized. This decline has been steady since 2009. The expectation was not really that this was going to happen this time, but a number of factors were responsible for this. It was to do with factionalism within the party, corruption, and the fact that the opposition started, you know, coming together. So it's been a consequential election for South Africa, because it's going to be a new beginning, not only for how the country is governed by the executive, but also in terms of how parliament is going to organize itself going forward, considering that the ANC also lost dominance of the parliament, and now there has to be some kind of governing coalition.
Do you think the outcome of South Africa's election could have lessons for other African countries where the ruling parties have been in power for years?
The outcome of South Africa's election have lessons for other African countries. First of all, the elections were largely well organized. Secondly, there was no violence. So you see a dominant party fall from grace, from power, and has taken it, without any kind of violent response. So it's something to look forward to. But on the other side, too, it's also a lesson for how political parties and the governing elites in Africa should not take their populace for granted. And more Africans are beginning to become politically educated, politically aware, and they ask tough questions. They are using social media spaces, digital spaces to organize and reach their own consensus about the direction they want their countries to take, and particularly among citizens. Young people are a factor. So what is the policy of government for young people who are the future of the country? How are you incorporating them into governance? But not just politics, but the economy itself. The economy was a major factor, in all of these elections. Populism also played a role in terms of how political parties, created issues around immigration in the country. And some pandered to the populism, and they fell on their sword. Some played it very well, and they, gained some popularity. We're talking about the Progressive Alliance, for example. So these issues are going to become significant in terms of how coalitions are organized in the country.
What are the options left for the ANC to form a coalition government?
Well, the options left for the ANC, there are several options. It is unlikely that they will have a coalition with the new kid in the block, the MK party, Nkonto Esizwe party, which was a breakaway from the ANC, former President Zuma's party. They've already given conditions that they don't want President Ramaphosa to be president, that they will want to work with, and the ANC has come out clearly to say that there was not going to be any discussion if Ramaphosa was not president. It's very unlikely that they will reward the MK for bad behavior, so I don't see them forming a coalition. The EFF would have been a very good option, but they didn't get up to 10%, which should have made the ANC 40.5% of the votes to become a possibility. So most likely to be the DA, the Democratic Alliance, which has been the opposition for quite some time. They have well over 20%, so the ANC can conveniently form just a coalition with one that political party. Like I said, there are talks ongoing, and it appears that there could be compromises there. So those are the options that I think, except the ANC wants to have more than one party, and then it begin to look at the EFF and possibly the IFP. But the point is that it's clear that the good of the country, good governance, laws that will ensure the sustenance of the country, the fiscals, those are the things, and then of course immigration, those are the factors that become determining swing factors in terms of how the country is governed going forward.
And that was Chris Isiki, Professor of African Studies at the University of Pretoria, speaking with reporter Mike Mbonier. Donald Trump returns to political campaigning this week as the first convicted felon to run for U.S. president as a major party candidate. VOA correspondent Scott Stearns looks at how voters are reacting to the verdict on the campaign trail.
Donald Trump supporters continued to cheer their candidate outside New York's Trump Tower a day after the former president was convicted of 34 felony counts of falsifying business records in a scheme to illegally influence the results of his 2016 election. In the city's Chelsea neighborhood, voter Nicholas Warner says the conviction was horrible and the country needs a second Trump term.
When he was in office for 4 years, we had nothing like we have going on now with the war and everything else, or the freaking, you know, the economy and inflation. So I just would like him to come back so we can just take care of business like a businessman and get this country where it's got to go.
In Maryland, voter Arkady Lapidus says Trump's claim that his trial was rigged is not good for the Republican Party or for the country.
There is nothing until this party dumps Donald Trump, says we believe in elections, we believe in the courts, we believe in juries who hand down verdicts because they're our fellow Americans. Until the party wholesale, like, espouses American values as I see them, I will never vote Republican again.
Voter Margaret Barnes says that even with a felony conviction, Trump is more believable than Joe Biden.
Biden just strikes me as being fake, and he's just fake sentimentality, just telling stories as if he's this nice old man when, you know, it's just artificial. I don't believe him. It's insincere. And with Trump, he's bombastic, and he's, you know, in that world of gold toilets and champagne and caviar and golf courses and Saudi princes. But even though what he says can be offensive, I believe him a lot more.
In Colorado, voter Luda Golodnik says Trump's conviction is deserved, and she hopes it hurts his campaign.
The way that he speaks about women, the way that he treats other countries, the way that he talks about illegal immigrants, him being married to an immigrant also, it just, like, yeah, I think he needs to. He's had what he's had coming a long way.
In Nevada, voter Keith Dayton says the verdict has no impact on his vote.
I'm still voting for Donald Trump. I think this whole thing has been a mockery. I'm embarrassed for our country. I wouldn't have him over for a beer or go to the pub with him. But that's not what it's about.
In the electoral swing state of Pennsylvania, the verdict may boost Trump supporters, says voter Jeffrey Nesbitt.
I think it would be much more effective for the American people to just beat him and his movement at the polls. I think that there's a good possibility that this verdict may motivate his movement to come out and vote even more aggressively and act.
That was Scott Stearns reporting on U.S. elections. And with that, we wrap up our African News Tonight report. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Nelson Lopes, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.